I do think that we do lead fairly repressed, buttoned-down lives, and along comes a drag queen and says, fuck all that.
Hi, I'm Thad Russell for Reason TV. Today we're talking with Fenton Bailey in our studios in Los Angeles, California. With his partner Randy Barbato, Fenton Bailey founded the World of Wonder Entertainment Company in 1991. Since then, World of Wonder has produced scores of films and television programs that have brazenly violated the taboos of mainstream American popular culture. Their documentaries and reality programs have shown Americans inside the worlds of the pornography industry, prostitution, and transgender people. Their show RuPaul's Drag Race, a reality competition series featuring drag queens, has been a hit on the Logo Network and was recently renewed for its sixth season. Recently, World of Wonder celebrated its 21st anniversary with the publication of a book called The World According to Wonder, 1991 to 2012. Thanks for joining us, Fenton.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to ask you first, why did you start making films and television, and what did you want to accomplish with it?
I think, you know, what really inspired us was this thing called public access, which back in the day, cable providers had to make available channels to the public. If they wanted to run the cable in a city, they had to provide two public access channels, and they operated on a first come, first serve basis. So all the crazy people out there could make their own TV and have it shown on TV. And we found this treasure trove of crazy shows that bore no relation to anything you would see on commercial TV. And that was really inspiring to us. It was this sort of era of sort of anyone can do it. It was a slightly punk thing. And TV always seemed so locked down and regulated, whether it was commercial considerations or education considerations. And this was just TV that had no motive. It was just crazy anarchic stuff. And it was that was totally what inspired us. We were like, oh gosh, we want to do this too.
So until then, you know, television was the three networks and PBS, right? And then since then, we've had the proliferation of cable networks. Deregulation has allowed many, many voices on television. And I've noticed that people often bemoan that, the number of choices. They'll say, oh my God, now there's 500 channels, right? Yeah. Was that a good thing or a bad thing for you?
Oh, you know, it's totally a good thing. You know, Bruce Springsteen, right? 57 channels and nothing's on. Well, it's not true. There's a lot on. And the more channels, the more voices and the more different faces that you're going to get to see. And so even though, yes, there is some valid criticism that a lot of television is the same and mimics itself, the fact of the matter is there are voices now on TV that wouldn't have been on TV, simply weren't on TV 20 years ago. I mean, back in the day, the idea of a drag queen on TV was some sort of unimaginable horror. It just wouldn't happen. But, you know, drag queens are perfect for TV because they leap out of the screen. And when we are pitching shows these days, you know, all the executives at networks are always like saying, yeah, we want characters, characters that leap out of the small screen, you know, people who can have big impact, even though, you know, small screen, big impact. Mm-hmm.
So I have to tell you a story. When I first heard about you many years ago, a friend of mine told me about you. And he's a gay man, and he said, they're great. They do all these wonderful shows. They're very gay. I was wondering, you know, do you take that as a compliment, an insult? Is that a good thing? Does it mean anything to you?
It doesn't really. I mean, we are gay, yes. I mean, how gay? I didn't know there was really a sliding scale of gayness. I mean, it's like, is there a sliding scale of pregnancy? I think you are or you aren't, you know?
He thought that there was something identifiably gay about your shows. Is there?
Maybe. You know, I wouldn't say we're necessarily strictly LGBT TV, but I do think there may be a sensibility, but that often gets defined or characterized as gay. I wouldn't necessarily characterize it as gay. I would say it is exuberant, or it is unafraid to be eccentric. It is celebratory. I think those things often do get considered to be gay, but I don't think that they're inherently gay characteristics. I think what always excited us about gay people and being gay is that at some point you just have to have the balls or you're just going to live your life the way you want to. And we've always been drawn to and admired characters who kind of live their life out loud. So out of the closet of repression. Doesn't mean you have to be gay.
I consider your shows to be shameless.
Ah, yes, but, yes, and, right.
And so do you wear that as a badge of honor?
Absolutely. I mean, why should anyone be ashamed of anything? Right. It's just, there's no time for that, I think. And, you know, guilt and shame and all these sort of negative things. You know, we just always... And I, you know what the thing is about TV? It's a small screen. And so you need big, large characters. And I sort of think that's what life's about, too. It's not about, you know, going around with a bag over your head, being miserable. It's like, you know, it's here and then it's gone. It's it's like a, you know, everybody's like a flower or something. So it sounds very new agey, but I, you know.
So most of your shows deal with sex quite openly.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, you know, it's a big absence on television. It's like sex is a really kind of important part of who we are. You know, like if there were no sex, there would be no civilization. There would be no society. So it's kind of the engine. And so it always struck us as odd that it was never talked about, or it was just invisible on the TV landscape. And when we did, it took us 10 years to get Pornography, The Secret History of Civilization made. That was a, you know, six-part documentary series, because our idea was that pornography, sexually explicit expression, has been this sort of initiator. It's been the sort of midwife of new mediums, and that whether it's the novel or whether it's movies or whether it was video or whether it's the internet, sexually explicit expression has been that sort of initial killer application that gets these mediums accepted by people. This is how people get exposed to new media. And so we thought it was a really important story to tell. It's not really about getting off, but I think sex is profoundly important. It's extraordinary that we have all this violence around us, but sex is considered beyond the pale or somehow immoral. But it obviously isn't.
I'm very curious about porn. I mean, a lot of people see it as, at best, just sort of a release from the repression of our society. Do you see it as anything more than that, that's beneficial?
Yes. No, I think pornography is like, it's almost like the first expression of documentary filmmaking. I mean, it's real. What you're seeing when these porn stars are going at it, they're actually doing it. There's not a body double. It's not, they're not, well, they may be faking it, but they're faking it while they're doing it. I think it's fascinating the way in which pornography is a kind of documentary experience. It's a sort of reality TV experience. And I think what's interesting in America, certainly, is that pornography has been allowed to exist as a business, as a transactional thing, as a way to you pay your money and you get off. But it hasn't been allowed to exist as something worthy of discussion. It hasn't had a place at the cultural table. And that is when people get really upset and angry. They're fine with the porn, just go buy your porn and jerk off. But the idea that porn would have any more importance, that's what gets people upset. When we were making Inside Deep Throat, we went on a campus to get the views of young people, you know, and the faculty came and shut us down. But all those students were downloading porn, looking at porn, using, consuming pornography. But what upset them was the idea that anyone would talk about it. And I do think pornography has been incredibly important. You know, even now when we've reached a point actually where the pornography business almost in a way is ceasing to exist because the internet, that great democratizer of absolutely everything, has meant that now people just do their own porn and they put their own porn up and there's no real need for a porn industry the way that it used to exist.
Many of your shows are about celebrity, right? You've had a very long relationship with RuPaul.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that? Talk about the history of it, it started.
The moment Randy and I were in Atlanta and performing, and that's a whole other story, but we saw RuPaul on the streets of Atlanta and he was wheat pasting. He was putting up bills of himself and they just said, RuPaul is everything. And we were like, this guy's a star. I mean, and he always was a star. It was just the rest of the world kind of had to catch up.
I mean, he was a black drag queen who became a mainstream star.
Yeah.
How do you explain that?
Well, you know, the thing about drag is, I think people get caught up on the idea that it's men dressing up as women. Yes, technically, but that's not really what it is. I think it's this presentation of self. It is this sort of, it is this art form. And whether it's someone like Lee Bowery or RuPaul, what drag is it's a commentary on the culture. It's a sort of satire or a pastiche of consumer celebrity culture. And so people think it's taboo or forbidden because it's men dressing up as women. Well, you know, women have dressed up as men for hundreds of years without anyone paying any attention. So I don't see why it's such a taboo that a man should dress as a woman. And I think it is this, it has this larger significance. It is this commentary. It is this way you can comment on the culture and talk about the culture.
So RuPaul's Drag Race, it's entering its sixth season, a big hit on Logo and on VH1. Why has it become so successful? A reality show about drag queens competing with one another.
I know, right? It's like, I think it's irresistible exuberance. I do think that we do lead fairly repressed, buttoned-down lives, and along comes a drag queen and says, fuck all that, you know? And they take everything and turn it into something. I think that's the other thing. It's sort of alchemy. That idea that you, without a lot of money, just a little bit of imagination, you can create something out of nothing, that you can just reinvent yourself. And I think it's that fundamental appeal of dressing up, that really, you know, even if you're someone who goes to work in a suit and says, well, I don't do that anymore, you probably have dressed up for Halloween once or twice and enjoyed that experience. It's a very sort of fundamental, fun thing to do. And I think it's also empowering to try on different roles and assume different personas. It's kind of like what life is about. And I think there's something very pure about why it appeals to people. I think the other thing is that this is a show that is itself a show in drag, and that we take the conventions of reality shows and competition elimination, and we put it all in the hopper and we parody it and celebrate it. So it's the sort of show of shows, you know. That's why we love making it and hope that people like watching it for that too, because you can get a sort of commentary on everything that's on TV and in pop culture when you watch Drag Race.
So should there be any rules applied to television? Should there be an FCC? None at all?
No, it was a terrible mistake.
So you have a son.
Yeah.
And you're fine with him watching anything on television?
Oh, no, I'm not fine with him watching everything. But I'm the parent, and so I get to say what he should and should not watch. I don't need the FCC to regulate that for me. You know, and he doesn't really watch TV. He's on YouTube all the time typing in Lego. So he wants to watch Lego trains. And I have to make sure that it's Lego trains crashing, not real trains crashing. Because, you know, just if you forget to put in Lego, you're suddenly like looking at, you know, pretty horrific things. But I think it's okay.
What about sex? Do you want him to watch pornography? Would that be okay?
Well, I think it's up to him to watch pornography when he's old enough to appreciate it. I mean, I imagine he will. I don't know. I don't know that I'll really have a role in. I don't think he should watch pornography while he's a child, and like I don't think he should see violent things. But you know, often we're watching TV at breakfast, and I'm like, you cannot watch this. Like what they say on the news, I'm like, it's not fit for a child. I feel to hear.
Is that the violence? So we repress.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we celebrate violence. It's fine for children to watch violence, but we're not so happy with them watching sex.
Right. And we have this sort of porn violence on breakfast TV every morning. Like,
so we should abolish the FCC?
Yeah. I mean, really, you know, YouTube, people aren't really watching TV. I mean, young people aren't watching TV so much that anyway. Mm. They're watching YouTube, and the FCC doesn't really exist in terms of YouTube. So in a way, it's taking care of itself.
And you've seen American civilization go into the gutter because of that, right?
Well, you know, we are where we are. You know, I think the problems we have are not really related to drag queens being on TV.
I thought you were the cause of our problems.
There are other causes at work here.
So what do you think of PBS?
Ah, PBS.
Speaking of the government determining what we watch.
Yeah, I know. The thing about PBS is, you know, as a viewer tuning in to watch it, is it's just dull. And I'm sorry, I think that's inexcusable. I don't think TV should be dull. I think, you know, anytime you tell a story, whether you are a writer or a filmmaker or a recording artist or in TV, you have an obligation or some sort of responsibility. Well, you don't have to, but if you want to tell a story and you want people to listen to your story, and if you don't want people to listen to your story, why even tell it? So we assume that telling a story, you want an audience. I think that means you have some obligation to draw the audience in. And I watch PBS, and it's pushing the audience away.
Why is that? Why do you think PBS is so boring?
I suppose because it thinks it's better than the people that are watching it. And I think that's a fatal mistake. It's the highbrow problem.
Some people have said we are paying for the elite's entertainment.
Right.
Through taxes.
Right. Well, it's worse in England, where you've got the BBC, where everybody's paying,
that's right.
You know, a vast fortune in the form of a license fee to be educated and entertained.
Right. So I want to talk about sort of contemporary gay politics for a second. Mm-hmm. And I think you and I might have some differences here, but we've had a couple of small skirmishes about this, on Facebook maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, there's the argument, which I'm sympathetic to, that gay marriage has been always a conservative movement, that it was intended to, as Andrew Sullivan put it, end gay culture, right? Mm. And you see that in a lot of ways. I mean, there's sort of an assimilationist piece of it, right? So, in fact, many of the proponents of gay marriage called for banning drag queens from pride marches in San Francisco and Miami and elsewhere. And, now, that hasn't happened entirely,
right,
but, you know,
right.
Is there... If gays start getting married and having children and being just like us, right? You know, I mean, will America lose something?
Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of gay people. We're not all sort of wig wearing, high heeled wearing radical subversives. I mean, I applaud the queens at Stonewall who picked up a brick and threw it at the police. I mean, they really... You may think a drag queen is some sort of fey figure, but drag queens are fierce. Mm. They are, you know, they're like the Marines, I think. Mm. But not all gay people are drag queens.
Right. How are drag queens like the Marines?
They're the toughest of the bunch. I mean, it wasn't, you know, if it wasn't for Stonewall, if it wasn't for them picking up bricks, there wouldn't be a gay liberation. We wouldn't be where we are today. And I do think that, you know, someone once said to me, sometimes you've got to pick up a motherfucking rock. And that's what the drag queens did. Anyway, not all gay people are drag queens, you know. And I think that some gay people do want to get married and have kids. But that doesn't mean the end of gay culture. If any of those people want to ban drag queens at pride parades, well, you know... That's their loss. And you're always hearing complaints from people that the fist fuckers and the drag queens are always ruining it for everyone else because they give gay people such a bad name. But here's the point. The whole idea of being gay is it is kind of like a rainbow of different people. So if you are gay, you can't start legislating about what's too gay or not gay enough. And of course, you know, there are gay bullies just like the straight bullies. And there are gay stupid people just like the straight stupid people. So I think that I personally believe that you have to have the drag queens and the fist fuckers at the parade, and you should. Because the moment you start saying no, you're creating some kind of, you know, trying to create your own sort of elite society. And the whole point about being gay is kind of everybody's gay, you know, not necessarily in terms of sexual orientation, but that sense of being a minority of one. I think everybody is a little bit gay. And so being gay is not about excluding people. And so if you want to get married, I think it's very important that we should have the exact same rights as everybody else.
Do you want to get married?
I've sort of thought about it, talked about it. Talking to my partner about it, mm-hmm. We're talking about it right now. Mm-hmm. Part of me does. Yeah, I want the same. Yeah. I mean, my upbringing was, well, you can be gay, that's fine, but you can't get married and you can't have kids. And I always thought, well, why not? Why not? Why do I, if I'm gay and special, where do I have to live over here in this box where I can't be married and I can't have kids? Like, there must be something wrong with being gay that you aren't allowed those things.
So if you get married, will you stop making RuPaul's Drag Race?
Absolutely not. Okay. It's like, no.
Then we're fine.
All right.
So I have one last question. I want to know whether or not Alex, our cameraman, and I are the only straight male fans of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Well, for a start, you're both gay, right?
Oh, you know. That's why.
Everybody's a little bit gay. Like Honey Boo Boo said, right? Didn't she say that? Yeah, I think she did. Great civil rights leader, Honey Boo Boo. But also, there's a huge female audience for Drag Race. And I can't imagine that they're all gay. I don't think you have to be in the least bit gay to enjoy Drag Race, personally.
I can guarantee that.
Well, thank you.
Although I guess I am gay, so. Well, I think we're going to have to leave it there for today. I want to thank Fenton Bailey for joining us today. For Reason TV, I'm Thad Russell.